Welcome to Recalculating America, a program dedicated to small business in America. Recalculating will help you, the American small business owner, build a new business or help you to grow your existing one. Each week, experts will give you useful information about starting your new business, and you will hear from professionals selected to help you grow your business. Your hosts are Don Mazzella and Dan Perkins. Don Mazzella is the editor-in-chief of the Small Business Digest and has many years of experience helping small businesses build and grow their businesses. Now he is sharing his ideas with you over the air. Dan Perkins is a registered investment advisor with 43 years' experience in managing money. He specializes in helping small business owners make their money work as hard as they do. Now, your host, Don Mazzella and Dan Perkins.
Well, good evening. My name is Dan Perkins, and I'm your co-host, along with Don Mazzella, on Recalculating, a program dedicated to helping small business leaders increase profits. We draw the name for our show from the best-selling book by the same name, Recalculating. The book featured contributions from more than 100 presidents, experts, and leaders, all of whom offer ways to grow your small business. Don?
The only constant is change. For small business leaders, it means taking the time to better understand what is happening to their companies, to their employees, and most equally as important, their clients. In every show, Dan Perkins and I and our guests will talk about what is happening in today's world and how we can help you improve profits.
So do we have our guest?
Yes, we do.
Well, welcome to the show.
Hi, Don. Hi, Dan. Great to be with you today.
Could you please do us one quick favor and pronounce your last name, please?
Yeah, sure thing. It's Leshefsky.
Leshefsky. Do you mind if I call you Greg?
Greg is absolutely.
Thank you for coming to the show. You know, we're very interested in your business model. You know, small business leaders have to compete with big box retailers, social media advertising, and public relations, but also in offering terms and conditions for purchasing their products and services. And Greg has a company with a great tool to help even the smallest retailer. Greg, welcome to the program. And first, tell us about yourself and then how you got involved in this business.
Sure thing. I spent the last 20 years in consumer credit. I grew up, if you will, in a monoline credit card issuer called MBNA that subsequently was purchased by Bank of America, mostly on the new product development side. And then from there, joined a startup in the Baltimore area called Bill Me Later, which was a pioneer in online financing. And that company was acquired by PayPal. And you know, throughout the 18 years or so I spent at those two companies, I really came to appreciate when offered and used properly, you can really create value for both merchants and consumers through credit offerings. And thought there was an opportunity to actually step out and create a product that was purposely built to serve Main Street and small businesses, with a focus on making it low cost and super simple for them to launch so that they can compete with their big box neighbors and essentially level the playing field while giving consumers a product that empowered them to have financing anywhere they want to shop, not just where the big banks happen to cut deals.
Well, Don, I have to do a little full disclosure here. I don't know that I ever specifically met Greg, but I was a financial consultant to the National Education Association, and I negotiated the Affinity credit card program with MBNA and NEA, which was the largest affinity program in the history of the bank. So I have a long-standing relationship when it was MBNA with Charlie Colley and John Cochran. So I don't know whether I have met you, but it was a dynamic place to work. So with that said –
Yeah, that's great, Dan.
Pardon?
That's great. That is definitely one of the flagship programs in the history of affinity cards, to be honest, not just MBNA.
Right, I understand. So tell me, who would be a typical user of your service?
Yeah, so on the merchant side, at the broadest stroke, it's anyone that has a reasonable amount of big ticket sales, anything approaching $200 or higher, whether that's an individual product or a basket size that reaches that size. From a vertical perspective, we really built it to cater to just about any vertical that you'd find on Main Street or Main Street and online. So whether it's a bridal shop, a bike shop, a women's boutique, a local wellness facility, sporting goods, auto parts and accessories, service-oriented businesses like plumbers and contractors. We really built it with this sort of Main Street mindset and thought it was important for us to level the playing field for all vertical types.
Dan, you're talking, but we're not hearing you. Greg, I'm going to jump in and ask you. I'll give you the example I think I've given you before, which is a bridal shop. A woman comes in and buys a $1,000 bridal gown. How does it work? How does your system, company work? And by the way, the name of your company and how people can reach it?
Absolutely, Don. So the name of our product and company is BlissPay, and they can
spell
reach
it.
Us on our website at blisspay.com, which is BLISPAY.com. And for all the small businesses in your audience, we have a section of our site called Merchants, and they can learn more about the product and fill out a quick little form, and we'll be happy to get back in touch and walk them through the product in greater detail. Walk through a demo, etc.
We're going to put that address on the website on a recalculating with a link directly to it, so that people can, if they didn't have a pencil and paper, they can pick it up. I guess I did have my microphone in mute. Question I wanted to ask is, Greg, is you've talked a little bit about who the potential user is. Where would you not recommend using this?
So, if you're operating a business that is mostly selling smaller ticket sizes or has a basket that at its highest is going to get to $75, $100, it's not really going to work for you, because our purpose is to help drive sales by converting browsers to buyers and moving ticket values up. So if you're a Main Street candy store or a shop, food store, et cetera, I wouldn't think it's a fit. But if you sell hard lines where 10, 15, 20% of your tickets are all or higher, we have some patio furniture stores where average tickets, well above $200. We really think we can help you grow sales and level the playing field against the big box stores, down the highway that have financing options for their consumers.
But what about going to major appliances or automobiles or used cars or those kinds of things? Does that model work there too?
Yeah, so appliances, yes. Automobiles, full automobiles, not so much. We do have some automotive partners in our network, and they tend to use it for two things. Service is a great use case for it. So you need tires unexpectedly, you have emergency repairs, you have suddenly a $1,500 bill that you weren't planning on. This is a great option for someone to sort of take care of that need today and have a flexibility of paying for it over time. And while they're there, you may get someone that not just do the tires, but maybe upgrade the rims or vice versa. That would be a good use case, detailing your car or whatnot. But actually buying your car, probably not. Our line sizes, I'm sorry, up to about $10,000. So it obviously intersects with someone's credit worthiness, but if we can support a purchase up to $10,000 for certain customers.
I just read an article on Drudge. I think it was a Bloomberg article that said right now, 50% of the people in this country could not write a check for $500 because they don't have the money in the bank to write it. So how important is credit quality and credit rating in determining whether or not you're going to make the loan?
Yeah, it's definitely an important criteria. So our focus is on serving customers who have the capacity and the demonstrated ability to manage credit. There are a lot of newer lenders coming out that are catering to folks a little lower on the credit spectrum. And from a need-based perspective, obviously there's help that's needed there. It's obviously it comes with higher risk from an enterprise perspective. I also find it drives less favorable behavior on the lender side. There's more, pricing gets egregious when you start going down market, experience, fees, et cetera. And that's not where I'm sort of interested in playing. You know, I come out of, as I mentioned, MBNA, which clearly had a sort of prime center, and Building Later as well. It started as focused on the prime and higher customer base. So it is an important factor. Your stat is right. It's about half, a little more than half the people are in a prime and above credit spectrum. They do the majority of spending in the United States. I think it's north of 80% these days. But we are not currently serving those lower on the credit spectrum.
Well, we had a jobs number yesterday from ADP of almost 300,000, and everybody's very interested in what the job number is going to be tomorrow. I suspect that if this economy starts to expand and more people go back to work and people are working full-time versus part-time, credit quality might increase. Let me go back to Don's question. He asked you about a woman wants to go to a bridal shop and wants to buy a $1,000 dress, and she comes to you. What is she ultimately going to pay for that $1,000 dress, buying it through you?
Yeah, great question. Let me walk through the experience as well, because I think that was part of Don's question, and then we'll get to how the money flows. So if you're the bridal shop, what you would do in order to help someone finance a dress is let them know that the option of financing exists, and that tends to happen through merchandising material we provide, whether it's a placard or a tabletop or a window sticker. It just communicates, hey, you have this option now of no payments, no interest for 6 months on purchases over $199 plus 2% cash back, and that directs folks who are interested to their own mobile device. And this is where we really focused on the experience and making it really simple and easy for store operators. Through the phone, someone goes through this, still personal credit application process, and unlike most in-store solutions, they get to keep it to themselves. A progressive, clean experience only takes a couple of minutes. They get to the end of that process, and if they're approved, they learn what their credit capacity is or their credit line, and then they have immediate access to a digital list pay Visa card that they can then use the shop in that store as well as elsewhere, and then the associate would just manually key in the number to complete that first purchase. And on that $1,000 dress, they'll ring up $1,000. The merchant will get paid their $1,000 in the next day or two, just like they get all their other Visa transactions settled. It'll be net of the interchange or the discount rate they're already paying to process Visa, but there's no incremental cost, because it was put on BlissPay and they were able to offer this financing terms. And that's like another part of how it's super simple for these merchants. There's not new operating rules. There's not a back office process to wash. There's not a new settlement to look for or wire, et cetera. It just flows all through their Visa business. And then the consumer, the young woman who bought her bridal gown will receive a monthly bill from us. That first bill will be the $1,000 less $20 statement credit for the 2% cash back. And then if she pays it off in full over the next 5.5-6 months, she'll only pay $1,000 for that dress. And the majority of our customers will only pay $1,000 for that dress. A meaningful but minority number of customers will end up going beyond the six-month term, and they'll pay interest on the average balance they carry prior to 6 months. And then if they continue to carry on, they'll continue to pay interest on that dress, and our pricing is 19.99%, which compared to financing products on the market is quite positive. Most are in the mid 20% range. And then it'll vary. So the majority of customers will pay $1,000. Some subset will pay a little more than $1,000. I haven't done the math to tell you what the average would be, but it would probably be somewhere between $1,000 and $1,100 on average.
And so what's typically the repayment term?
It's 6 months, no payments, no interest.
Right.
Which is a minimum of 180 days. It'll end up being a little more typically, 195, 200 days, based on the way the expiration and interest calculations actually work. And then it's priced at 19.99%.
So most people pay off within 12 months.
Within 12 months that any individual transaction will almost always be paid off. The majority will pay off actually in 6 months.
Okay.
Greg, how do you make money?
Well, it's on the population that doesn't pay off. We'll end up incurring interest, and interest will drive most of our economics. But the great thing about this business is, it really is about a balanced portfolio play. So you don't need the majority of your customers to be paying interest to build a reasonably good returning business. And then because we have a product that you can reuse, so the great utility we give the customers is, we help the merchants on that first sale, but then our customers have a Visa product and they can use that again. And any transaction over $200, they'll also get a separate 6 month term on that transaction. So they're back to the woman who bought her bridal gown. She may have had a $7,000 line of credit. She spent $1,000 on her dress. She can then go take $6,000 that's remaining and spend $2,000 on her honeymoon and have 6 months to pay off that honeymoon and then return from the honeymoon and spend $1,000 for new furniture for the new house and have a separate 6 months for that. And as customers, on a transaction basis, the majority will pay off, but some will pay off. People will swap in and swap out of paying us interest. So in one transaction, they may not. The next transaction, they may. The next transaction, they may not. And as long as we're having a good balance, we'll create interest revenue. We get a little bit of revenue from the merchant because of that Visa, the Visa fees they pay. We give most of that back to customers and the 2% cash back. And then we have a small fee line as well, but that's not nearly as important as the interest.
So did I understand you to say that if somebody applies for $1,000 for the dress, do they apply for $1,000 or something greater than $1,000?
So they apply for the BlissPay product, and we give them the line that is commensurate with their credit worthiness. We don't tie it back to the first transaction. So if our underwriting algorithms say that it's reasonable to give someone $5,000 of credit capacity, we'll give them $5,000 of credit capacity. In most use cases, it will be enough to cover that first purchase. In some use cases, it may not.
And so once they pay it off, they still have that line.
That's exactly right. Once they pay it off or as they pay it down, they continue to have line and access to the BlissPay Visa card, which started digital, but we actually will deliver them a plastic, a traditional plastic Visa card that they can use anywhere Visa is accepted. And they'll have a line similar to any other bank card. Their Bank of America, their NEA card, should they be carrying one. I think they're still out there.
So if a Lowe's Lowe's hardware store can take a credit card, Visa, MasterCard, American Express, to handle the transaction, excuse me, and they have an appliance department and they're talking to somebody about a new washer and dryer that's $1,000, what's in it? What's the advantage of Lowe's or a local appliance store of using your program versus the credit card program that might already be in place?
Yeah, so Lowe's is a great example to use. So Lowe's absolutely has a financing option that they can give to that customer. And as a result, they'll sell more washers and dryers, or they'll sell a higher average washer and dryer through the relationship they have. I think their relationship is with Synchrony. The Main Street store, the appliance store that survived all this disruption and consolidation et cetera, may or may not have a program depending on if they were big enough to get one from a Synchrony or a Wells Fargo. But they do have one, even though they're already accepting Visa, MasterCard, American Express, they're likely paying a very high rate to offer that program to their consumers. And it's almost certainly a cumbersome paper process to give someone access to the financing. But the reason they're willing to pay the higher rate and deal with the paper is because it helps them sell more washers and dryers. There are lots of people who are prime credit customers that like or need optionality on how they manage their cash flow, particularly for a bigger ticket purchase like a washer and a dryer. And that's where BlissPay steps in to either serve the merchants who didn't have access in the first place, so that they don't lose a customer to Lowe's. So there may be a great affinity to shopping at the Main Street appliance store for a given person or a couple, but because they need to spread out their payments, they go to Lowe's today because they know they can get a line of credit and they can pay for it over 6 months. We level that playing field for that local appliance store, and we do it at lower costs and without the need for a big point of sale integration.
Greg, you're the guest. You go first.
I just say versus using the Visa card they already have in their pocket, because they may have $2,000 for a washer and dryer, but if they use their NEA Visa card, they're going to pay interest in 25 days, and they're going to use capacity on a product that they weren't planning to use. So we give extra capacity and longer payment terms.
Greg, I have a couple of questions, and maybe you answered. I didn't. I have your card, and I pay off the bridal gown. But then, as you say, I go and spend $1,000 on a honeymoon trip. Do you grant them the six or the year month without pay automatically, or is there a certain level you have to reach before you can get that credit?
Yeah, on subsequent purchases, it happens automatically as long as the purchase is over $199. We'll automatically give a new six-month term, a new clock. It's not from time you open the account. It's from the actual swipe, if you will.
Right.
If it's a purchase for $50, you're buying some books for the trip. That will go on to your BlissPay account as well, but we'll sort of be subject to typical credit card terms. You have 25 days grace. It'll be due the next payment due date, et cetera. And on all of those, you'll get 2% cash back.
Well, what I liked about your system is you enable the Main Street stores to compete with the big boxes. I happen to know I use Best Buy a lot for my purchases, and one of the things I like about it is that they give me up to 6 months to pay off, or a year to pay off without interest. And I always thought that was a great advantage for them. And you certainly have come in and given Main Street stores a big advantage.
Yeah, following that, we just got a minute or so left. It would seem to me that the small business person, the non-franchisee, the small business person running the tire shop or the bridal shop or the drugstore or whatever, where they're dealing with purchases over $200, this would be a very, very interesting financing package that would be more attractive, as you pointed out, than a credit card situation. Is it cumbersome for the businessman to get involved?
It's not. We really, to both those points, we built this at Main Street in store. We, having spent time at PayPal, who really caters to a lot of small online businesses, we really focused on engineering out the hard stuff. So it is a call to us, a 2.5-page agreement, and we give you signs, you put them up, and you're in business. We've launched stores in as little as an hour if they're nearby us, because we can drop off material, and as little as a day or two if they're across the country. We have a small cabinet store in Hawaii that's offering BlissPay.
Greg, I have another question. You get 100 customers from a store. Do you give the stores back a list of those customers so they can market against it?
We don't currently do data sharing at that level with our partners. It's something in the future we look to extend our platform so we can do more sharing of information to help improve the entire relationship. We will meet with folks and talk about sales and share and average ticket to make sure we're driving the behavior and the benefit that we believe our product can do. But we don't get down to the customer level in our current form.
Greg, tell us again your name, how people can reach you and your company.
Absolutely. So it's Greg Lischewski, and you can reach us at blispay.com, BLISPAY.com, and fill out the little merchant form, or if you're a consumer, by all means, give us a try. And we'd love to hear from you either way and help all your small businesses compete.
Thank you, Greg, for being with us. I find what you're doing fascinating and very helpful to small businesses. And I hope our audience found it as interesting as I did. Dan, you want to say anything more?
No. Do you have a phone number people can call and get information?
Yeah, unfortunately right now we don't have a call number to give out, but we monitor the website and the forums regularly, so we're pretty expedient in getting back.
Good.
And just thank both of you, Don and Dan, for your time. It's been really great to talk to you.
Thank you for having the time to come and spend with us and enlighten our listeners. This is Dan Perkins, and we need to take a moment out here to hear from one of our sponsors. We'll be right back after these messages.
We're having difficulty with our sponsors today.
Welcome back to Recalculating, a program designed to help you be successful. Now it's time for Money in Motion. Dan Perkins is our resident expert in making the money you earn work as hard as you do. Here is Dan Perkins.
Dan, before we hear from you, I wanted to read... I bought a product yesterday, a new heater for the studio here, and when I opened the box, there was this big picture at the top in this pamphlet. And you know what the pamphlet said? We can stop. We can help any customer missing hardware. Do not go back to the store, but call us. Now, that really stopped me. They're telling you not to go to the store, but to call them, and then they'll send you the part that's missing. But the real concern I have is, why put this in at all? But it really stopped me, and I thought about it, and I had to stop and say something about it.
Well, I think one of the reasons why they probably did that, Don, is that their experience has told them that customers who try and go back to the store to get a part is an enormously frustrating experience, and the store can't help them. So rather than to have a customer angry at them, there's something missing, call us and we'll replace it. It's going to be much faster and actually more positive for their reputation to do that as opposed to go to the Lowe's or the Home Depot and find that nobody has any idea what to do, can't help them. And then they ultimately say, go call the manufacturer.
Well, they say up front. I just found it interesting. I've never seen one before. But anyway, I'm sorry?
Was everything in the box?
It was, and it seems to be working. But this sign sure stopped me. But anyway,
All right.
Back to the most important thing. Dan, your commentary, which I always look forward to.
Well, thank you, sir. We said in our conversation with Will that tomorrow is the unemployment report. And we had a situation where ADP announced yesterday that in the month of February, the economy created about 300,000 jobs, which was 100,000 And yes, I said 100,000 higher than what they were forecasting. So there are two questions on the table at the moment. What will the number be? And will it be accurate? Now, I think the number will be higher than what was expected. My guess is there's a lot of economists shuffling quickly to adjust their forecast before the number comes out so they don't look like ADP and they miss it by 100,000. But I want to take you back to a point in time where we had a situation where an employee in the Department of Labor manipulated the numbers, specifically because he wanted the president to look bad. So I'm going to be a little skeptical tomorrow because there are numbers that say that there are over 4,000 Obama appointees still within the administration, in the government. In fact, there are some people that believe that many of the leaks that we're experiencing is coming from those people. Now, so we might have to take a little skepticism tomorrow about the jobs number. But clearly, the numbers are going in a direction. I mean, I went back fairly quickly and looked to see if I could find any month in the history of the Obama administration that we had 300,000 new jobs created. And I couldn't find one. I'm perhaps there was. And if our listeners know about one, we'd certainly like to hear about it. And so now we have a situation where if the government number is fairly high, then the movement moves to the Fed as to whether or not the Fed is going to raise rates. Excuse me. And so if the Fed raises interest rates at their next meeting, conventional wisdom is that about 0.25% move. Now, the Fed told us last fall that they would probably like to see rates go up 3 times in 2017. But I think that if the recovery in jobs, the people going to work, continues even anywhere near the pace that it has for the month of February, the Fed may, in fact, move more often than 3 times this year. We'll find out the strength of the market as we get closer. Now, the 10-year yield this morning was about 2.57. It had been in the 245 to 248 for a number of months, anticipating the move by the Fed. But it hit 257 yesterday. Oil fell to below $50 a barrel. And one of the reasons why it fell is that the American currency, the dollar, seems to be rising against all major currencies around the world. In fact, the European Central Bank this morning announced that they're going to continue a zero interest rate policy so that the cost to buy oil or carry oil in a trade is getting more expensive because of higher interest rates. But as if the economy starts to expand and you start seeing more consumption of oil, and less inventory building, you're liable to see crude oil continue to rise. I think that we have to understand that almost an entire generation, Don, came through the last, say, almost 10 years with virtually almost earning nothing on their savings. And now that the Fed is starting to raise interest rates, there's modest return, 0.1%, 1.25% on savings. Still not anywhere near what it was 15 years ago, 20 years ago. But we've had a long, long period of time where we had practically nothing in terms of return. And so what happened is in order to try and survive, more and more consumers and small business people I've taken more risk in the market to try and offset the fact that they're getting very little income, interest income. I'm a trustee for a trust for an individual. And last year, about $250,000 portfolio in money market interest earned in their deposit. They don't, obviously don't have it all in that, but whatever they had in cash in that account over a 12-month period, they actually earned 28 cents in interest. You can't even buy the lid for a cup of Starbucks coffee for 28 cents. So as interest rates start to rise, the momentum of the economy, if it's going to move under Mr. Trump, will in fact create a more pressure on interest rates, which means that people might begin to see some modest returns on cash and certificates of deposits to the bank. That will cause a shift of money from the markets back to the banks. And so what we're going to have is a competition between the banks and the capital markets. We could be in for a little rough patch here as the Fed begins a positive bias to raising interest rates. My concern is that, as we talked last week, the small businessman who's working 24/7 on trying to keep his business afloat or make it grow, and in today's market begin to wonder how much more business he or she can do, they have even less and less time to look at their money and what they're doing with it. So I think that one of the things that's extremely important is asset allocation. And asset allocation is spreading your risk around. I think that that you need a certain amount of cash, and I have certain rules that I've used for now over 44 years that might be helpful to our listeners who don't have a lot of time to manage their money but want to be prudent with what they're doing. So let me give you a couple of some of the rules. First and foremost, no investment, with two exceptions, cash or U.S. government securities, at the time of purchase, can be greater than 5% of the portfolio value. So if you've got a $100,000 IRA, then no position other than cash or U.S. government should start out greater than $5,000. Now, if you get lucky and you've picked something really well, it's possible that over time, that particular portion may be something greater than 5%, and that's okay. But we want to start out with nothing more than 5%. So the first rule is no position other than cash or U.S. governments can be greater than 5%. Number two, almost as important as number one, whenever possible, be paid while you're waiting. What I mean by being paid, either you earn interest or dividends. And dividends now are going to be much greater than interest, especially in the treasury market. So being paid helps reduce your risk, helps reduce your volatility. Investments that pay a dividend are typically more stable than investments that do not pay dividends. And so I always expect to get paid. Number three, everything has to be for sale, potentially for every day, meaning you want to have liquidity to be able to get out of a position or all your positions if you wanted to at any given point in time. And three, making sure that you put your money to work on the most tax advantage way. And what I mean by tax advantage, if you have the ability to have a SEP IRA and you can set aside $49,000 and you have the ability to make the payment, putting $15,000 in a regular IRA and you can put $49,000 in a SEP IRA, you need to take a real hard look at the SEP IRA. Because if you can control the taxes that you have to pay on your investment, see, most people, Don, who are running a small business and have money to set aside for investment, don't consider the taxes when they're putting money to work. And so they'll put money in the bank, or they'll put money in a money market fund or whatever, and they don't realize, even though they're earning a very small amount, they're going to have to pay taxes on that. Where if they were funding a retirement account, they would get, one, the tax deductibility of the purchase of deposit money in the retirement account. And number two, the interest and dividends that they earn is going to be tax deferred. Now, I think it's interesting. The Republican replacement on the Affordable Care Act seems to have a very strong position for HSAs. Now, I know that the House was in a 15-hour session yesterday. I know there were some people who wanted to lift the caps on HSAs. I haven't had a chance to hear how those negotiations came out, but clearly HSAs is going to be one of the cornerstones for the new healthcare program. And I know you had a lot to do with creating the HSAs and marketing them, but again, it's how efficient is my money? Am I putting money to work into my most tax efficient, which is the last thing, the most tax efficient way? Because if I can control the taxes, I have more money to reinvest and compound. So those are some of the rules that I think are important that investors need to deal with, especially small business people who don't have a lot of time to manage their money on a daily basis. Don? Can't hear you.
I really believe in HSAs. Because you don't get taxed when you put them into your HSA. You don't get taxed on the interest you earn from it. And you can put your HSA into just about anything except one or two. I think diamonds is one of them, but I forget what the other one is. And more importantly, you don't get taxed if you spend it for medical at the end of it. And what do we spend in our declining years most on? Medical. So, I mean, that's why I believe so strongly in HSAs, and why Speaker Ryan is so much for them. When we did the White House conferences on HSAs, he was our featured speaker when he was just a congressman and pointing out all this. But Dan, everything you've been saying is very interesting. If you wanted to sum up in the last 2 minutes, what would be the three things you'd tell small business owners?
I think that it's when I started my small business, I knew that it was important that I had operating capital to run the business for a certain period of time. When I decided to go out on my own, I sat down with my wife and I said, look, we have enough money in the bank and in our savings that I can pay the bills and not make any changes in our lifestyle for probably 2 years. If I can't make it a go within 2 years, then I'll go back and find a regular job. But I'd like to be able to try. So having enough money, which we've talked about before, being undercapitalized is a bit huge issue. Having enough money to maintain your standard of living for 2 years is very important. Now, why that was important to me, Don, is that I figured this. If I had, let's just say, I had $100,000 worth of expenses, was what it cost for me to live. I put $100,000 and I had $100,000 in the bank. So I could live for a year. But in that year's time, if I brought in $10,000 of additional income, I stretched my money. In fact, I looked at it for every dollar I brought in was a dollar that extended the term that I had a chance to be successful. And I was fortunate enough that in a matter of 2 or 3 months, I had replaced 100% of the income that I had given up when I decided to go on my own. So having enough capital is number one. Number two, which is very important, as soon as possible, start paying yourself first. To spend all of your money to give it to other employees and all your expenses to run your business and not get anything financially out of it is going to be very disheartening and very frustrating for you as an entrepreneur. You have to see the ability to try and make some money. If the business model can only pay the employees, pay the expenses, and there's not a way in order for you to make money, then you got the wrong business model. So as quickly as possible, start paying yourself. And as soon as you start paying yourself, start putting money aside for retirement. Because see, Don, every dollar that you wind up putting in your retirement account helps offset potentially the income you're going to need in retirement, which means if you do well and you put money away in your retirement account, you can find yourself in a situation where your retirement account can pay you an income that you don't need to work at all. I don't think a lot of people, I don't think a lot of entrepreneurs like you and I are interested in not working. But for this young person starting out, try and build security. My second son is a small businessman and left from Wall Street and started his own company. And struggled for a while, but he had enough money, and now he's starting to not only pay the bills, but starting to pay himself. So make sure you have enough capital or access to capital, and make sure your assumptions are reasonable. And two, as soon as possible, start paying yourself, because if you get no reward out of your efforts, you're going to become very frustrated, very angry, and very unhappy.
You know, that's ironic. Isn't that the title of your contribution to our book, Recalculating?
Yeah. Yes. I'm one of the contributors, one of those people who contributed to your book.
Well, the point was, that's one of our better examples inside the book.
Mm-hmm.
But it's time now for a break, and we'll be back right after this.
Hate your old fax machine? You can now fax through email. Simply write an email, attach the document, and send. Works with all major email providers. Get rid of the noisy and expensive old fax machine and try Biscom's Cloud Fax. Our solutions are great for businesses of all sizes. Visit Biscom.com for your free trial. That's BISCOM.com.
Yep. We're back, Dan. And before we go into our final thing, I want to talk about a product that was just handed to me about 2 weeks ago to try. It's by ISIS, ISIS.com.
Hold it up
they
so
don't
we can
pay,
see it. What is it?
They don't pay me, but you know what this is? It's a total machine to put all your – when you're on the road, you just come back from a meeting – You wrote down all your notes. You can put it right in here, and it digitizes it and puts it into your computer. You can also put all your receipts in here. It organizes. It is one heck of a product that when they sent it to me to try, I said, what could they possibly show me? Well, here it is. It's small. It's compact. And it's very effective. And the interesting thing about it, I've already lost it twice because it is so small. I lost it in my car. I just wanted to tell our listeners about it. They can't see it, but it's about 14 inches long by two inches square. That's all it is, and it has a cord to plug into your computer. And you're off and running.
So how would our listeners get a hold of this?
I'm sorry?
How would our listeners buy? Where would they go to buy it?
ISIS. Well, they can buy it at any Best Buy store or any place else. But they really have some really neat new products on ISIS.com. ISIS.com. It's a really good product. And I'm glad they sent it to me. I've lost it, as I said, and I really enjoy it.
So for our listeners who need to know that this show is being simulcast on Skype, so you can go to our recalculating.biz website, and you'll actually be able to see Don Mozilla holding the product up in the air, so you can have a sense of what it looks like. But go to the website. We'll put a link on our website so you can see what they have and other things. And let us know if you try it, if you like it. Don?
Well, I really enjoy it, and I hope people will too. Now, this to me is the fun part of the day. The first we usually have three good parts. The first part is our guests, which today I found fascinating. Then your commentary, which I always learn something. That's why we're partners. And now comes the part where we talk about what's happening in the world and how it affects small business. I want to talk about, I'm going to jump to one. NASA reported, and I found this fascinating, that there were 13,000 small companies that contributed to the space program over the past, this latest report was the last 10 years. That means that 13,000 small businesses, and by the way, they define it as 500 employees and less, are involved in the space program. What do you think about that, Dan? Have you any thoughts?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. We're now seeing television commercials for the pipeline, Keystone Pipeline, and what it's going to do. But one of the things that they're talking about is that for every person working on the pipeline company, there are 2 to 3 people behind them in small businesses that are supporting. So when we talked a couple of weeks ago about the Keystone Pipeline hiring 28,000 people on the pipeline, there could be another 50 to 60,000 people in small businesses who are helping support those people and the companies building the pipelines. You see, that's what's made America great, is that we'll have a big company like an automobile company or a steel company or whatever. And it might employ thousands of people. But there are many times that number of people in small businesses that help support that factory to keep it running. And so when Mr. Trump is trying to bring back manufacturing in the United States, he understands the math. Every assembly line worker or production worker, there's probably 2 or 3 people behind them in a small business. We know that there's over 2.1 million businesses in the United States, yet only about 30,000 of them have more than 500 employees. So we've got almost 2 million small businesses like mine and yours who employ less than 500. We don't employ 500, but we employ less than 500. And that's what's built this country over time. The understanding of how small business and large business works together to create a synergy to provide products and services that, for example, a big company just isn't interested in doing. If you think about a factory that's producing an automobile, in some cases, most of the parts that go into the automobile are not made by the automobile company. They're made by subcontractors. That's why when you go into a car dealership, the sticker now has to show you what percentage of the parts that are in the car came from what countries, and then where was the vehicle assembled. We have people that are supplying parts, all kinds of parts, from as little as lenses on the headlights to engines to whatever. And so the automobile companies have found that they're in the business of assembling. But in reality, the automobile companies are not really in the business of assembling. They're in the finance business. They want to sell cars because they want to finance the cars, and that's where the real money is. My point is that there are thousands upon thousands, in this case millions of small businesses who have been suffering under a depressed economy for almost 10 years, who are now seeing in Mr. Trump and his desire to want to make America a great again, to make it grow. You know, and I got to believe, Don, that that 300,000 number yesterday from ADP, and if it's a big number tomorrow from the government, is going to put a lot of Trump's critics going to be very quiet, because I heard Nancy Pelosi say recently, well, where are all the jobs? So the number that came out yesterday kind of silenced her. If the government reports big numbers, bigger than ever than Obama, again, it's going to take some of the ammunition away. And I think that that the bottom line here is that, as you said from the very beginning when we started this campaign over 18 months ago, it's about the jobs. It's about the economy. And if Mr. Trump can get the economy growing and he can create jobs, no matter how much crap the Democrats try and throw at him, the people that are working in the factories and the mines and the chemical plants and the refineries and everything else and all the related businesses, they're going to be much happier. And some Democrats are going to be very unhappy.
Well, we know how you feel about it. Interesting, a poll came across my desk 2 days ago from Buy Sell, indicating that 53% of the 2,000 small businesses it polled were more optimistic about the economy than they have been in the last 4 years. And and interestingly enough, 55% were very positive on President Trump's ideas of on immigration, on the Mexican question, and the economy. So you might be reflecting what our audience. We'd love to hear what our audience feels about. Go to info@is-incorp.com if you have any kind of comment you want to make on this or any other subject that comes across during these broadcasts. Dan, I just got one more to ask you about.
Okay.
It's always easier on this program for me to ask you than for you to ask me, leastwise for me. But you know what's really affecting the economy is the gig, the idea that people are not hiring permanently anymore, but rather for projects and for specified time limits. What do you think about that?
Well, first of all, you need to explain to our audience, just in case there are some people who don't know what gig means. What is gig?
Well, a gig is any non-permanent assignment that has a defined length or length of time or a specific attached to a specific project. That's how it's being defined in this world today. And there's study after study seeming to indicate, in fact, the New York Times, I know how you like that paper, devoted almost its entire Sunday magazine to it 2 weeks ago. But the point is that we are not hiring permanently anymore, but rather for specified. But Dan, I'm looking at the clock, and
we barely
have time to say goodbye before we have to say goodbye. We'll have to leave this one outside.
Let me just respond to that real quick, because we've got about a minute. I think that what the emphasis on gigs is a reflection of the uncertainty of the business community about what's going to happen. They have seen what has happened over the last 8 to 10 years. They're somewhat gun shy. So it's going to take some time for Mr. Trump to build the confidence back. And you'll see less and less gigs and more permanent hiring. And with that, we need to say adios, and we'll talk to you next Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern. This is Dan Perkins.
And Don Mazzella.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you for joining us on Recalculating. We hope the information you received on today's show was helpful to you in starting and growing your business. Please go to our website, recalculating.biz, for past shows and special offers. And until next time, remember, if you grow, we grow. Join us next week for more helpful ideas to make your business a great success.